When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
White marks for the new breed. This week on the podcast, Joe Boyle's Brog the Stoop.
Hello, welcome to Teen Creeps, the podcast that discusses YA pulp fiction. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kate.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And we are discussing another point fantasy book, Brog the Stoop by Joe Boyle. And we are joined by a very special guest. We've had him before. It's a pleasure to have him again. He is a writer and podcaster. You know him from Doughboys and How Did This Get Played? And he is also a writer on the new show Earth to Ned, now streaming on Disney Plus. Nick Weiger is joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thrilled to be back.
Thank you doing the podcast.
Let's get stoopin'.
Yeah, hell
Let's
yeah.
Let's vlog this bad boy.
Hashtag stoop nation. So we read this book that Joe Boyle eventually did write.
Yeah.
Those are facts.
Before we say how we felt, did you know? I mean, I think Lindsay, I think you know because I saw that you left a review on this of this book on Goodreads. that the reviews of this book are 4.14 stars out of 5.
People love this book. I wish I had read the reviews beforehand, honestly, because it would have completely put this book in a different context. But everybody was like, oh my God, this was a beloved childhood classic. And I was like, oh, okay. This was for young British children.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that tracks.
I think the UK thing is key because once I read that the author was British at the end, finished the book and then the about the author page that follows, I was like, oh, okay, this all adds up because you think of there being commonalities in taste between the US and the UK, but there is in fact a gulf as big as the ocean that separates the two continents.
Yes,
there are gaps.
And particularly so for children's stuff, apparently, because
yes,
I did not enjoy this book.
I love British kids books. Like, oh, is Wind in the Willows actually American?
Or what about, Rabbit.
Winnie the Pooh, yeah. Peter Rabbit, Peter Pan.
Sure.
I usually love British children's literature, usually.
You know what I'm going to say maybe is the key to this, because I was seeing this in a lot of the reviews and I was feeling this while I was reading it. And I think the difference is that one is a movie and one is a book. But everyone was like, wow, you can totally see the Dark Crystal influence for this story. And I was like, so this story like doesn't have any of the puppets or like really cool practical effects or
the,
just
like only
visual
thing
whimsy.
That I actually.
Yeah.
I'm that like, interested in.
Because could you, like truly, would, if someone were to ask me, do you actually, like the character of the boy Gelfling in Dark Crystal? Like, do I want to be friends with him? No. I have no interest.
Well, Wire, you've been writing for a brand new Jim Henson creation.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the crew for that and cast is how you describe the puppeteers who are all just an unbelievable degree of talent, the way they are able to bring these things to life. A lot of them worked on Dark Crystal previously to working on Earth to Ned. It's all Henson Company alums, and so it was I heard a little bit about that process and it just seemed like it remarkably painstaking. And then also just the just the like aside from the artistry of manipulating these puppets and bringing them to life through, you know, voice and motion, it's also just the technical side of how like advanced these things are, how many like just gizmos and gyros they have inside them. I almost said gyros, which is a gyros. Different thing.
Yeah. That's what you guys get for crafty.
Yeah. but there are, but yeah, it's kind of, servos, I guess is the term. It's kind of remarkable to be around that and it just being a world I know nothing about, but just getting to dip my toe into the water for a little bit. I do think the Dark Crystal is very cool. And I guess I wasn't actually thinking of a Dark Crystal parallel until you just said it there. And I'm like, oh, I see how people, if you liked what's in the Dark Crystal, then I could see the same. It's the same sort of like dark, otherworldly, adjacent to our reality, but kind of its own thing, you know, mm-hmm. That I feel like the Dark Crystal evokes.
I don't know. I just feel like people are
it,
ascribing
it sort of like Fraggle Rock, where it's like the humans
right.
yeah.
are a completely different entity or civilization.
And also, I just feel like people were like projecting what they like about Dark Crystal onto this story, because like the commonalities are the otherworldly aspect, you know, it being like very fantastical and different. And I think that's, to me, where the similarities end.
Mm.
Because I did not feel any of the magic or straight up like Dark Crystal was one of those movies that when I was little, like I would be really scared, but like want to keep watching and just like be like really frightened the entire time. This I felt maybe nothing reading this book. I don't think I felt scared or angry or anything. I was mostly tired, maybe.
My critique,
I felt a little
would be
unnerved
that,
at times. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you were unnerved? Sorry. You were? When?
I just mean like it's there are aspects of it that are, it was just darker than I expected. And I guess I wasn't, you know, like a lot of times you're reading a children's book and there's like, or a young adult, you know, I feel like a lot of times there's maybe a, you know, one key death or something.
Oh, or yeah, lots of deaths.
There's
lots
so many
deaths.
So many, you know, of these entities of various species are being just killed in various battles. And it's a lot. It's not just like a gigantic, you know, army where some of the army is being killed. It's like these are a bunch of individuals. Like, we know there are, whatever, 12 stoops in this battle, and the bad guys are Gorks?
Yeah, Gorks.
Yeah, and we know that, and the Gorks are just going to kill, like, 9 of these 12 stoops. I don't know, for me it just seemed like kind of like an overwhelming degree of carnage, particularly for a young reader, but maybe I would be into it.
Well, there was also the thing of, like, they, or Joe writes the characters, like, dying thought, like, every
yes.
time as they're about to die.
Oh, I hadn't
yeah,
thought
really
about that,
weird.
But that's true.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Lindsay?
Oh, I was going to say my critique of us talking about how, like I said, oh, maybe I should have read the reviews beforehand so I knew it was, like, a little bit more for children than I was reading it as, or the Dark Crystal influence. But my critique would be, like, I shouldn't need to have those pieces of context to enjoy the book.
No.
So, yeah, I was... It was like, it's not like the language was dense, but all of the different terminology was becoming infuriating to
oh
me.
Yeah,
I was yeah. having to take so many notes just so I wouldn't trip up while we were talking about it, and I was taking so many breaks. Like, I would sit down, I'd read for 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'd go, you know what, I should really cut my nails, read for 5 to 10 minutes, you know what, I should eat now instead of later. You know what, it's 1 a.m before I get back into it, I'm just gonna make my kitchen sink cleaner than it has ever been in my time living here. I was scrubbing my kitchen sink from and parts of my kitchen from 1 until 1:25. I was like, dude, okay, I have to finish this fucking book now.
If you want to clean your house cleaner than it's ever been, read this fucking book. Because it is hard. It was hard for me as well. And I kind of touching on, I wrote like within the first 3 pages, I think, or whatever, like 3 locations on Kindle. I took notes because I was like, I need to do a glossary. So I have like black time is nighttime. Black hours is like the hours at night. Moon runs, I have question mark.
Moon run, first I put month question mark, and then I put no, years question mark.
Year maybe, yeah. And then day span is like a day. Early day span is morning. Ground shake is earthquake. Light hours are daytime. And then grow time is puberty.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a a coming of age sequence in this. I will say that puberty is pretty directly paralleled. I will say that it is the kind of thing where it's kind of that find and replace world building where some of the stuff I'm just like, okay, I get that part of what's cool about having a fantasy world is that things have different names. But if you're just taking an existing thing and then just calling it something else, I think that just creates confusion in the reader unless it has some different attribute. Like if a ground shake is in some way fundamentally different than an earthquake, or maybe ground shake is what the characters say in dialogue and earthquake is... what the narrator is conveying to the reader. I don't know. I mean, some of that stuff, it's just so much lore and so much vocabulary that I was just getting the same as you. I could read it like a chapter or two at a time, and then I just have to like just pace around my apartment.
Yes.
Well, there's
just
like
do anything.
There's okay. This is gonna. There's this tabletop game called Dialect, and it kind of like explores like how languages are born and then eventually die if they're not, you know, kept up by whatever culture they have. And it's kind of like, you know, like how idioms are born. And so you kind of play as people in this society that you know will be extinct, but you create language based off of like things around you and things that happen. And like it was a really cool it's a really cool thing that like kind of teaches you like why we use the words we do and like how words change and how they grow. It is clear that Joe Boyle does not know why words are created and does do a lot of that kind of like paint by numbers thing you were talking about, Nick, which is just like, to me, it was exhausting because I was like, but why? Why is there a different word for this?
I think you need to I'm trying to think, there's a better phrase for this, but I guess choose your battles. Like, not that these are battles. I can't think of the phrase I am actually thinking of. Just like be more like deliberate in your choices and mindful of why you're choosing different words. So it's like, obviously the different creatures would have names. I understand new breed is for the Gork that can fight in the daytime. Old breed is the one that fights in the nighttime. Like, there's not a parallel.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
Well, you have to take notes, Kelly.
I stopped after
do your
grow
homework.
Time.
Yeah.
Or like,
I couldn't.
Saying like proper nouns and names and all that makes perfect sense.
Sure,
but like,
sure.
If you're saying eye shield,
God.
No fucking idea. I thought it was
I was wearing fucking sunglasses
like most of the time, and then when it like broke off, I was like, oh shit, he's been wearing sunglasses this whole time. Like, he had on a pair of Ray-Bans. Where did they come from? What's going on?
Yeah.
And particularly when it was like, I texted this to Kelly, but I was like, just wait till you get to the part where you're like, all right, what is Shearstone all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Like, there had been so many names for their particular like land where they live. Like, it's there's Glow World and Drab World and
Terra World
and the Flatland is where they like cleared a bunch of trees, and that's where the council meets. And I was like, well, then isn't that the Shearstone? Why are we only now calling it Shearstone? I never heard the term flat place again. And then maybe I'm crazy, but all of a sudden at the end when he keeps saying Great Gloom, I was like, I thought you lived in Drab World. What is Great Gloom? Has he ever called it that before? Is that what the forest is called? Why would the forest be called Great Gloom when they live in light? I was just like, I don't know. You need to pick what an area is called and stick with it, because I am don't know where I am in your, like, Kelly and I read a different fantasy book last week, and we were sort of like tongue in cheek talking about how fantasy books always have like a map at the beginning.
Yes.
And how we were like, okay, I appreciate that you worked on that, but I'm like going to look at it and retain none of it. This was one time where I was like, oh, you should have made a map, dude.
Could have used a map.
Because I would have been referring to that thing.
Wait, hold up.
In my edition, at least, there was a map. However, the map is so small, I couldn't make out any of the text on it. So it was utterly useless, you know, for a read that's so confounding in terms of trying to stay oriented and understanding what everything, you know, everything that's named it actually represents in the world. It's like, I was like, oh, I'll go back to that map, but no, can't read any of it. The only words I can make out on it are Glow World and Great Gloom. All the rest of the text is so, so small. And then just the way everything is positioned, there aren't really a lot of visual hints in terms of what they're meant to represent. I'm also not sure if knowing where these things positionally are in the world would be all that helpful, because a lot of times it's understanding where things positionally are within a scene.
Oh my god!
I'm just like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be looking here. Yeah.
There is a map on the Kindle. It must have just jumped to the very first page, yeah, and so I assumed there wasn't one. Okay.
Also, I mean, here's the thing. I could have stood to know what any characters looked like, because...
Okay, yes. Please continue. I'm sorry.
I mean, the Grok, I did not... First, I thought they were just like beasts, like cat beasts. I thought maybe they were catish, but they're not catish. They're like lizardy. But then they have these tails with like big spikes on them. But so I was picturing like bearded dragons. Then they have weapons. So then I was like, do they stand? But then they have hind legs. So I was like, so then they're on all fours. And I also, like, then there was like the white thing on their heads.
Yeah. I didn't know what was going on with the character, because I was like, I don't really know what the stoops look like or what the gorks look like to any degree of certainty. And also, here is my reading initially until is it Jeb or Jed shows up?
Jed.
Oh, Jed. Yeah,
there's an actual human who shows up at some point who seems to be in scale with them. But I thought this was like a teeny tiny world. I thought this was one of those I thought this was like an epic, you know, like the DreamWorks movie where just like everything is like the size of like bugs and snails and that's what we're living in.
Oh,
you know,
that'd be cute.
I thought that's what we're dealing with, but then...
Just real quick. At one point, I thought that they were living under the earth for a while. That was
Lindsay
my theory.
Was convinced. She was convinced. She kept texting me. She's like, they live inside the earth. And I was like, okay.
I was like, that's just what I'm going with for now.
It did seem like they were kind of underground for a bit, but then they have the part where they specify some of the trees. And then when they go in the tunnels, it seems like, okay, they really are, that they weren't, it's not like
they
this is an
under.
All underground thing. There's another underground thing. It's hard to track exactly what the larger planet they're on is like, you know, in terms of I was just very confused the whole time, and I don't think it was just the vocabulary.
No, because it also just wasn't clear, because like I also didn't know what Brog looked like, or I didn't really know what any of the stoops looked like. All I know is that, and this is from context clues, their tongues are the color of people skin.
Right.
And then they're
unsettling.
Which, like, I only know this because he, like, was looking at Jed and he was like, wow, that guy's the color of my tongue. And I was like, okay.
And I'll assume white people's skin.
Yeah, we're going to assume white people because it, like, this book was in the 90s and unfortunately white is...
And also British.
Oh, yeah, is default. And then, so I know that Brog, before his grow time, was, like, lanky. But then after his grow time... His hair was so long and blonde, and he was jacked as hell.
Yes.
And really hot, like a hot stoop.
I sort of appreciated that it's like these creatures are like weird little elf mantises type things, except not insects. That's just their general, like, and I only know this because of the cover.
Yeah.
The only reason I really know what they look like is the cover, but they sort of look kind of elfy mantises. And I did sort of appreciate that they're describing these features, which to me sound hideous.
Yeah,
but they're all referred to as like, she is very beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, probably within your culture, she is very beautiful. I accept this.
This is one of those things where, like, just pre-deviant art in the 90s, if you had this specific, like, fantasy, you just had to become, like, a young adult fiction writer.
Yeah. 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 I'm going to see if there's Brog the Stoop fan art.
Maybe.
Am I going to regret this?
So while you're looking that up, I guess I'll read the synopsis for the book. Nothing, I don't think anything we've talked about so far is like that confusing for anybody listening, because it's all been aspects of it. All right. Brog, I kept wanting to say Bog the Stroop the whole time. I'm pretty sure I emailed that to you, Weiger.
I figured it out.
Bog the Stroop.
There's only so many
good
stoops.
Job. That
stoops
was a really good
and
job.
And Ogs.
All right. The source of light is failing. And for the Stoop who inhabit Drabworld, the encroaching darkness brings a terrible danger. Their mortal enemies, the Gork, led by the vicious Red Eye, grow ever stronger as the light fades slowly away. And it is only a matter of time before the Stoop are utterly destroyed. But there is one Stoop who will not accept defeat. For Brog has the brave heart needed to find the source of light and restore it to its former glory. And as he sets off on his perilous... on his perilous question, the Stoop Lord, Clan the Golden, leads the Stoop in a final and possibly fatal battle against the Gork.
So for me, there are some elements there. And you know, we talked about how in the world building, you know, sometimes it's just like just changing the vocabulary can be disorienting. But you both made the point that, yes, sometimes you need a proper name and a proper name that sounds, you know, different, distinct from the world as we know it is, you know, can be good world building. But I think there's also the element of just some of the choices that are made in that regard are strange. And one of them is mentioned there, which is that the good leader, like explicitly the father figure at one point of the protagonist, Brog the Stoop, is named Clan with a K.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then there's also an ally of Brog, one of the Stoops, who's named Dork.
Dork and Dork L.
And Dork L, yes. These things just don't sound like, they just sound like weird and like,
yeah.
Dumb.
Yeah, when all of a sudden you're using a real word as somebody's name, it's like, well, if you're not even going to use the word day, then don't use a real word for something else entirely. I'm struggling enough as it is.
Yeah.
Like, also, it makes sense to. I think probably the thing that jumps out as me is like, yes, this is something where you're going to have a different and specific name for it, is that their weapons are called a kathuk.
Yeah, fine.
And it is a small knife made from their tree called Magna Tree. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Sure, fine.
But everything else where it's just like a thousand different, and I understand that we have a thousand different words for where we live. But if you're doing that in a fantasy novel, it's just this like barrier to entry.
Yeah. And I think if the choices for the like alternate words were a little bit more instinctual, like if they made a little more sense, I think they would have been easier to follow. But they did seem pretty arbitrary. Also, OK, when Clan tells Brog that he's his father, I was so annoyed because I was like, what a dumb thing to try and make us care about. Like, I don't know who the fuck Brog is. I don't know who the fuck Clan is. Why do I care that this guy's his father? But it's presented as if it's like,
it was very Bambi.
Yeah. Or like the scene. Yeah. It's very big, but why should we care? We don't know these people.
This is in the aftermath of his mom, of Brog's mom. Is it Blid? Who's the
Blid.
Blid. So Blid gets murked pretty early on.
Yeah.
And then Brog, but when they reveal that it's his father, it's like it's a little like there's a passage that's like Brog knew that Stoops could only lay with one other
Stoop.
Oh my
God.
And so it's kind of like he's piecing together that this dude fucked his mom in a pretty like explicit way, I feel like, for a children's book.
Yeah, he's like, they fucked and they fucked monogamously.
Yes, yeah. Well, Stoops mate for life, yeah.
Only, I think, the women fuck monogamously. I had so much trouble saying that word just then. It seemed to me, because he says, oh, I laid down, she was like my breed partner or whatever, however
he
puts
it.
Oh, yeah,
breed partner.
He specifically says, and the... Oh God, the women specifically have a name, and it's like the Stupettes, basically.
You know, it is the Stupettes. Oh, yeah. It is the Stupettes. It's not basically. It's the Stupettes.
Great.
The Stupettes, like the Chipettes,
like Smurfettes, and the Chipettes.
So it said like, oh, and a Stupette only gives birth to one child. So that means if Clan lay with Blid, then I must be his. But it's not like. It's like, or here's a thought, Joe. Clan says, I'm your father. Like, we don't have to do this bending over backward, because he clearly wants to get out a specific of the word or the world, but it's like so unnecessary.
Well, he does it a couple times. He'll have the characters make these also like,
oh, all like, of the realizations they constantly
have.
Yes,
the
have.
Realizations, oh my God, where I'm like, we're there. We know.
Yeah.
We know. And they're like, you mean the source of the light? And they're like, yes, the brightest thing. And they're like, it will blind us? And I was like, oh my God, dude, yes, what? Been here.
There was one moment in particular, I highlighted it. Where'd it go? It was something about the way, oh, here it is, where like they all already know a thing and then a character will restate it and they'll go, oh my God, good point. So it's when Clan is laying out their plan. So the Gork.
The Clan plan.
The Gork are, yeah, the Clan plan, trademark. The Gork are androgynous and they lay eggs and they care about the eggs more than anything, even though they don't give two shits about each other.
Lizzie, yeah. This moment.
So Clan is saying, egg or Gork, he postured, which to kill first? One thing is for sure, none of us will live to see the last one destroyed, for there are too many, and the more by the day span. Their faces reflected the grimness of this truth. I was like, isn't this what you've been saying for the last 20 minutes to each other? What do you mean all of a sudden they're like, true.
And
this
I don't
thing
know.
That we've all been saying we're worried about, he just said it.
I don't know if Lynn was like stupid, but like when Clan is talking to, is it Lynn or the other one?
Lynn, it's Lynn.
Okay, so he's talking to Lynn, who, by the way, is hot for Brog. She's
they're supposed to be breed mates.
They're supposed to be breedmates. Yeah. But so he's like talking to her about this plan. And he literally is like, well, the one thing, he's like, these grogs don't care about each other. All they care about are their eggs. And she's like, wow. And he's like, yeah. So we're going to lure them with the only thing that they would want to protect. And so in my head, I'm like, the eggs. The ex.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, what? And he's like, the one thing. And I was like, why is this taking so long?
Also, it should be, you guys listening have to understand that Lynn was kidnapped as a young stoopling or whatever they're called, and has been enslaved caring for the eggs. So initially, she is the one who tells them that they prize
She's
the eggs
the egg
above
expert.
All. And then he's like, that gives me an idea. They prize the eggs above all. And she's like, wow, good point. I was like, you're the one who said it. How did we get here? It's like the guy in the meeting where a woman says their idea and then the guy just restates it and everybody's like, wow, smart.
I mean, this story...
That's my go-to in a writer's room.
Yeah.
That's how I stay employed.
Just wait until somebody else says something and then restate it.
I just feel like this... I mean, this story is not good to women, let's just say. I mean, it's just... It's...
Well, they're active.
Sure.
They fight.
Sure. And I guess... Who's the other one? The one who like can speak the Grog language or the...
Oh, yeah.
Kara. Hang on. I wrote this down.
Cora.
Well,
Cora and Lynn, I guess they do talk about like being enslaved. So that's something.
Well, they get themselves out.
Yeah.
But then they get like trampled and are in trouble.
And then Brog saves them. Which, by the way, were you guys surprised at Brog's like semi-apparent ability to like teleport to different places?
Oh my god. Oh my god. I have so many thoughts about the bubble.
Did you guys know? The bubble is wild.
Did you guys know that everyone that meets Brog will never forget him?
Brog's special. I mean, I never will.
Well, I did mark the page where it is described what Brog looks like.
The bubble?
Post.
Oh, what Brog looks like?
Post Grossman.
Oh, yeah. Damn. We got to mop these floors, y'all.
You guys should know that they're. Tonight. Yeah. Because they're about to get slippery. Their Grossman lasts a day. So.
Oh, they're grow time?
Is it? Who cares?
Yeah, grow time.
So they're children for a really long time, and then within the span of the day, they become very hot adults. So the early light, dim though it was, gleamed on the skin stretched tightly over his muscular chest and arms. Broad shoulders rippled with strength, and he held his proud head high, a mane of blonde hair cascading to his shoulders. He flung wide his arms, flexing and stretching his reformed body, and finally, eyes gleaming with intent, he threw back his head and gave a mighty roar at the sky. He was every inch a royal stoop.
Okay, that shit, the every inch thing, I was like very disturbed.
We know what you're doing.
Yeah, dude. It felt very, I don't know, like something that Lynn would say during foreplay or something. I didn't like it.
It's a little too erotic for the, but again, maybe that's a UK thing. Maybe they're okay with that.
I think that the UK is generally like a little, it's not known as being a little too erotic.
Yeah, I think they're pretty tight-lipped.
This isn't like the French.
So maybe this is like the acceptable outlet for that. I don't know. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's emerging from his cocoon to become a man and he's fucking hot as hell.
Yeah. Like maybe we're the perverts for reading the hotness into it.
Right.
True.
There are a lot of blonde hair. It seems really like blonde hair. Yeah. I was just picturing something a little bit different. So when the blonde hair kept coming into the picture, I was like, oh, okay, sure. These guys all have, you know, the fucking Motley Crue hair. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
But it's that part was weird. Can I also just return to the eggs plan,
sure,
which
sure,
I
please.
Think is, to me, I found it genocidal and horrifying.
Yeah, pretty bad.
They're just like, you know, because first off, they're and I get it that they're enslaved and they are, you know, trying to make do. And so she's sabotaging. Lynn is sabotaging every fifth egg just enough to so that the Gorks don't notice. Right. She's
keep their population down.
Yeah, exactly. Keep the population down. But then their ultimate plan is just to steal all the eggs. And then they'll get so like crazed that they'll be able to, they'll have them distracted and then they'll also destroy the eggs. I don't know. Like it truly is
genocide.
It's genocide.
And they have no qualms about it either.
No. Yeah. Not even a second. And I guess the Gorks are just so evil, you know, but in particular Red Eye, they're just so evil that you're supposed to be okay with it. But I did find it a little unsettling. I don't know. I had the same thought.
Like when at no point does Brog, the hero, ever think anything but I will wipe you from the face of Terra World.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, really? Yeah. Okay. And it's funny because last week Kelly and I were talking about how like we don't like it when at the like pivotal moment the hero will be like, no. If I kill you, then I become the savage. were like, just kill them. They're like obviously not going to reform. If you don't kill them now, they're going to try to stab you in the back. Whereas like in this case, I was like, well, you could have like a spare thought to their right to exist, maybe.
Sure.
Just like one thought.
Yeah. Or like maybe like removing Red Eye from the picture, maybe we'll like give them a chance to reform or something. I mean, guys,
but they're irredeemable.
We don't have to worry about that because in the like classic, like last scene, like X-Files episode style thing, they were like, oh, there's an egg. And
that's
it's
true.
Hatching.
Yeah.
It's Red Eye Jr.'s poking out.
Yeah, Red Eye Jr.
That's in the epilogue. There's a one page epilogue after Lynn and Brog finally get together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we talk about Planimal?
Oh, yes. My God. I love Planimal.
I truly love it. Planimal was the only thing I gave a shit about. And so when
I
he left, I was like, no, you're going to leave Planimal?
I thought Planimal was going to be with him the whole way. And then he's there for like a couple chapters. And then he's like, can't go any further. Bye. And then pops up again at the end. But I was like, I want have Planimal stick around. Yeah. You just establish a cool sidekick.
Because truly, like, first of all, MVP. Planimal.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolute MVP. Second of all, I will, maybe, because it did seem pretty exhausting to communicate with Planimal, because to communicate with Planimal, you have to project what you mean to say in your head, but with your mouth, you have to laugh maniacally.
Yes.
Every time.
I was really glad when that was like stated and then never touched again. And then
they were just having
a conversation. I was like, thank God I don't have to like sit with you like every time.
Can you imagine in the dialogue? Ha 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 ha
ha. I'll read a description of Planimal so that everybody knows what
Planimal was cute.
About.
I liked Planimal.
Planimal was adorable. Whether it was plant or animal, he could not tell. And Brog meets him on his way to find the drab keeper so that he can like get the rundown on what drab his keeper. Mission is. So but it was most definitely a mixture of the two, a slender green body with sloping shoulders leading to two leaf thin arms which waved in panic as it looked up at Brog with two enormous eyes set in a head as red and as round as the flowers which swayed around it. Two long pointed ears stood up starkly, and the creature was stamping its many toed feet in exasperation on an outcrop of rock from the boulder which just showed beneath the grass. It was no taller than Brog's knee, and it cowered in fright as Brog bent to peer more closely at it. So that's Planimal.
Planimal, the just reading the name, it sounded like a cartoon that was on in like 1995.
Yes. Yeah.
That no one watched, but everyone remembers. Like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, Planimal. That was on after like Eek the Cat. But basically, fundamentally, it's like a plant type Pokemon that's being described. Yep. And he's got some powers that are contingent on having a soft soil around. He has to have soft ground, and that's why you ultimately can't follow him into the tunnels, is it? I forget what point
the mountains.
The
Ryun Mountains.
Gloom World? No, something else. Something else that has only hard ground.
Drab. Wherever the Drab Keeper lives. I think it's in the mountains.
No. It's after the Drab Keeper because he goes, it's where the Glow Keeper lives that he can't go.
Oh, I got the Drab Keeper confused with a Glow Keeper. I also had, it was like at the end where one of them reemerges, I think, and I was like, wait, is he a bird? I thought he was a man. I was so disoriented by what form the keepers were actually taking.
Yeah.
The Drab Keeper was almost as if there are a set of beings called the keepers, and they all have their own specialty, and it was as if they're like in a laboratory and they're observing this tiny petri dish and they're not supposed to get involved, they're just supposed to take notes on what's taking place, but the Drab Keeper keeps like saucily getting involved, and so I guess he can just like manifest whatever he wants in the world.
Dude, the Drab Keeper was like a mix of like Q
right.
and like maybe like Marsupilami. Do you guys remember Marsupilami?
No.
What's
that? Well, he was a cartoon. He had a long tail and he was kooky. Anyway, I was surprised that that man was human.
Yes, me too. As soon as the drab keeper showed up, I was like, and then he was talking about like 12 other lands that we had to memorize so that we could understand what was going on. I was like, did this turn into the Phantom Toll Booth? Who is this character?
Yeah.
He has to travel to like meet Rhyme and Reason, basically. Like everything is taken on a different, like, kooky tone that was not there before. Yeah, he was from a different
that story. For me, I kept thinking of Return to Oz when I was reading him. I was like, oh, you like belong in something different than this story.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I think that speaks to the its overall darkness of just, you know, Return to Oz is you show that to a kid you're babysitting, you want to scare, you know. That's not a like we're gonna have you have a restful night's sleep. Mm-hmm. I just like it's that's what the feeling I got from this of like I would be intrigued. I feel like if I was being read this as a boy, by all the, you know, just like hearing all the worlds, all the terms about the world, but then just some of it is so like so unsettling or just violent that I'm just like, man, I don't quite know who the audience is for this, but again, apparently it exists.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, because there are parts that are like that. This part is like pretty scary, right? Because like he basically is like a Boggart. He makes you see what you're most scared of if you come into his lair.
As a
and
test?
And then he also...
And I was like,
I was like, what test?
They didn't even fight the thing. It was just like a quick like, here's what you're most scared of. And it's like, they already know that.
They know.
Yeah.
They know.
We just
And then he
them.
Also... He
I don't need to see a physical manifestation of me being dragged on social media. I know what my fears are.
I think that's all of our fear now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's also like, his like physicality is interesting because he reminded me of the Wheelers from Return to Oz, actually, because he has these like wheels that he maneuvers like with his hands and legs.
Okay, I was so confused. Is he in a wheelchair because he needs to be, or is he in like a fun little future thing? It was like as soon as we meet the Drab Keeper, we're in the future with like a spaceship type feel.
Yeah, no, it was like futuristic, like transportation device that he was in.
I thought he was like at first like some sort of robot / cyborg, like that's how he, because Brog doesn't understand the idea of wheels. He's describing that, or at least the narrator from Brog's POV is describing what Brog sees as like he doesn't know the word wheels. He doesn't know that exists.
But I had a thought about that. Continue.
Is he in a little car?
Maybe it is a little car. I don't know.
Maybe he's
I thought
like
it was part of who he was, but.
Yeah, a little hovercraft. Oh, that'd be cute.
But I think it's a wheelchair because it says he untucks his legs out from under him and then he stands.
Yeah.
I was like, why is it a wheelchair?
I don't know. To me, I thought it was like he was in a little contraption. Like, I did not understand the physics because also it said that some of the wheels were like in the air where his hands were. So I did not understand.
He was doing a wheelie. He's showing off.
Oh my God. He's coming in a little car doing a little wheelie. That's cute.
Sup, nerd?
I still don't really like him.
Okay, here's the description of the Drab Keeper. So real quick, I don't understand why he doesn't know what wheels are, but he does know what a door is. I was like, do they even have doors? Like he gets, so there, when he and Planimal are like ascending these mountains, searching for the Drab Keeper, this like flock of birds descends and start attacking them. And they're both like ready to die, fighting their last breath. And all of a sudden, they're encased in a bubble that floats to the Drab Keeper's saucer crater. And he gets there. And this is what is described. The walls inside were ice smooth and lead, they could see at once, in a perfectly straight line to a large blue door maybe 10 strides away. It took less than 10 of Brog's strides to get there, and after 4, the opening in the rock behind them swung closed with a soft but definite thud. Once again, they had no choice but to take the only option available, the blue door. It had no handle, but why would he be familiar with doors and handles? He doesn't even know what wheels are in about 2 minutes.
Doors came before wheels, right? They had to.
But they don't know anything. Don't they live in the ground under trees? Since when do they know the construction of doors and handles? He can't even... He thinks that the Drab keeper's legs are wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think that maybe Joe didn't realize what can of worms he opened in writing this. Like, he was like, oh, no. Once like, I have to create so much
or
more.
It was just like a blind spot and he never thought about it again.
I think it's entirely possible that he just missed this element, but like I think the wheels are the presence of the wheels are confusing. The door thing, I think he just needed to come up with, just call it like a wall portal you know, a room hole.
If you're going to rename everything else, at least rename the thing that I don't think Brog has ever encountered before.
I feel like he's like, if this, then what else? He's like, oh no, if I do the door as a wall portal, like what, like the ground is like,
where does
the
it foot, stop?
Foot planes and like the walls are like arm leaners and like just so many different, like the entire book is like incomprehensible.
If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want to use a door. Here's the description of the Drab Keeper. The room had suddenly become much longer, and from round the corner of that part of the room, which had most definitely not been there a few minutes ago, drifted the strangest creature or figure that either Brog or Planimal had ever seen. Drifted was the right word, for there was no movement of the lower part of the strange body, which was gliding swiftly toward them, except for four round black discs. See, he doesn't even know the word for wheel.
Dude, he's riding in one of those little, like, you know those little jeeps that kids ride around in?
Oh, those, there, like, you go. Yeah.
Little, what are they called?
Big,
like,
wheels?
Big wheels? Yeah, he's riding a little big wheel.
Maybe. Seemingly at one corner of the person which rolled him forward. He was small but bulky, with two blue eyes, ears on either side of the face, unlike Brog's, which were set higher on his head, and a tuft of yellow hair. Brog was unsure whether it was clothes he was wearing, why does he know what clothes are, or if what he had on was actually him, and if it was, then he was red from waist to neck with a cluster of spotty material beneath his chin. A bow tie, question mark?
Yeah,
whilst
I think a bow tie.
From the waist down, he was bright, shiny, and extremely spindly right down to the black discs which rolled around and round as he moved.
Is he riding like a little tricycle thing?
Well, then here, he came like to a silent stop and, to the friend's amazement, unfolded two red legs from underneath himself, became separated from the shiny bit, and stepped forward with a huge smile on his face to show a row of even white teeth. Is he like maybe like Professor X rolling into whatever that dome thing is called?
Cerebrus?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but Professor X isn't like faking his disability.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's
what,
like
I don't
Willy
know
Wonka. He like rolls in and then does a somersault.
I think it was a little bike type thing, but with four wheels.
Who's to say? What were you going to say, Nick?
Oh, it's just, again, like even, you know, I read that passage and then listening to you reread it, I still have no idea what I'm looking at.
Exactly.
Just like a weird, like, red humanoid creature who was in some sort of four-wheeled vehicle. I don't know the exact position of the wheels or the size. I think that just sort of speaks to the, just like the writing in general of just like, I'm having trouble. For something that is trying to build like this lush, vibrant, you know, other world, like just a lot of it, I just have trouble even wrapping my head around.
And it's so weird that he wouldn't, like, the author's choices, like, he wouldn't just say a portal opened up instead of door, but then he won't just say a chair set on wheels.
Yes.
Or a vehicle of some sort set on wheels. Like, his choices about what does have a name or what Brog does recognize as an object has no rhyme or reason.
Where has Brog encountered discs?
That's the other thing.
Why does he know the word disc but not wheel?
Also,
it doesn't make
remember,
any sense.
No, then he does know wheel, because remember he equates the fucking source as a wheel.
Oh, yeah.
And the Grogs use wheels.
Yeah.
because he has a chariot, the Red Eye.
Well, oh, but right. He doesn't encounter the chariot until after he's encountered.
That's true. That's true.
Because he compares it to
context clues.
The wheel. Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I actually was really pissed about the next human that we meet. Fuck, what was that kid's name? Jed.
Jed.
Because okay.
I miss Planimal.
It was like, exactly. I was like, this is a poor man's Planimal.
Yeah.
And then when Joe, the writer, keeps being like, oh, you know, the one thing that keeps us going is friendship. And what these two people had, Brog and Jed, was just, they were ride or die. And I was like, why? They just met. Like, they don't even know each other. Like, they're not friends.
I think that wasn't till the end, though, after their adventures together. Because at first...
No! When they get to, like, it's literally, like, they meet. He's like, you killed the Glow Keeper. And he's like, it's impossible. Would I do that? Would I do this if I had killed him? And, like, puts down his sword. Yeah. And the guy's like...
I guess we're friends.
And then they like set off on an adventure, and it's like, and that's when the friendship began. And I was like, it did.
I kept reading, like, and this is just me having consumed so much Jeb Bush content during his quixotic run for the presidency. I kept reading Jed as Jeb and picturing Jeb Bush sadly imploring a crowd of seniors to please clap. The guy is not, Jed is similarly like unmemorable and uncharismatic. He doesn't have a lot to offer like Jeb. And I don't understand the insertion of a human into the narrative at this point, because like humans are established, but I'm just like, wait, why does he have a human buddy? This feels like, if this is the story you want to tell and we want to be like, hey, here's an audience, like, hey, you little boy reading this book, you're the little boy in the story, then maybe we get to that earlier. But coming at this point, you're just like, well, now we're just handing it off from one sidekick to a lesser sidekick. I mean, it's like if Chewbacca was just like, you know, midway through Empire Strikes Back, Chewbacca just like pieces out. And then this just like a dude with like a bad haircut comes in and is like, hey, I'm your co-pilot now. How's it going?
I'm Jed.
I'm Brian.
Yeah, I'm Brian.
It's me, Brian. Oh, I'm going to break my leg and just slow down your quest.
By the way, I'm just wearing a loincloth. Is that cool? Oh, Brian, please.
For me, because his name was Jed, I kept picturing him in like checkered overalls that were like frayed at the knees with a little straw hat on askew, chewing on a piece of wheat. Like, it's just like, I'm Jed. I'm assistant to the Glow Keeper. I was like, you do not project magical Glow Keeper assistant in any way.
I could not picture him at all because he was such a nothing person. Like, I would forget that he was there, and then he would like get stabbed in the leg and like ruin everything. And I'd be like, oh yeah, he's here.
Well, they do specify loincloth when he's introduced. Am I wrong about that?
No, I'm sure you're right.
I'm sure you're right.
I just kept getting an image of like a hillbilly.
Right. No, I totally get that. But I just like...
No, I think
he should be wearing more.
Yeah, they put on some more clothes.
But then meanwhile, the fucking... all right. Don't the Stoop know what humans are apart from...
They do. They do, apparently, which I didn't know until the end of the book.
And then, so then why... It's so clear that the fucking Drab Keeper is supposed to be human. So why, when... What is his name? When Brog meets him, is he like, what is this strange figure?
Like, I know, and the guy's like, I'm human. And I was like, oh, there's humans. And then... Later in the book, they're like, ah, yes, the humans. And I was like, wait, but I thought you never saw them before.
Maybe they haven't, but like that, why it made, and only humans are keepers and they live thousands of years and they volunteer for the position. And they have the prime directive.
I just would rather have seen a story where either humans are completely in the background or just not present altogether. Because I feel like it's kind of I can't quite tell. Are the humans the dominant life form in this world like they are on Earth, or what exactly is going on? It's hard to picture.
What is the dominant species?
Right. Like, I don't think it's the Gork, but the Gork are certainly the most menacing. I will see the... I found the passage where he's introduced. This is before his name is specified, but here we go.
Okay.
Brog parried and dodged, seeing for the first time his assailant, a human boy, maybe his own age, a look of fierce anger on his face, sturdy muscles straining above the loincloth that he wore.
Unfortunate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
So he's like Island of the Blue Dolphins.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's Nell.
Or not. Not Island of the... Sorry, I meant Island of the... What? The Blue Lagoon?
Island of the Blue Dolphins is where she's
that's
stuck.
A girl and she's stuck. Yeah. What's the fucking Brooke Shields movie? Blue Lagoon.
Blue Lagoon,
Whatever.
But yeah, basically this quest is to... just jacked teens, just jacked hot teens going on a mission to save everyone.
Yeah.
I didn't... there would be periods of action where I was like, I don't care. And they would be so drawn out. And then there would be moments in the book where it was like, Joe got tired of writing. Because when they get taken up in the bubble, it says, before very long... it became obvious to the two friends that they were indeed on a direct course to the Ryun Mountains, their peaks much closer now. They could see to be but two high points in a chain of mountains which ran in a circle, and if the bubble kept to its path, they would pass between them. Exactly that happened. And within no
You know what, though? I do appreciate it because I would not have wanted to.
I'm like, that's some lazy shortcuts, but also thank you for taking it.
Thank you.
Like with Planimal, it's like, I do not want to hear about them cackle communicating. So thank you for just doing a shortcut and just saying that they're talking.
Yeah, there was a lot of like the first time he rides in the bubble. I was having trouble like knowing what was happening at all in this book, but like, so he and Planimal like go into separate bubbles, and then it's like, he's gonna go back home, and then the next scene is like, Brog was there, and I was like, oh, I guess he's here
when they when the Drab Keeper explains to them like the bubble and like why Brog just saw Red Eye and Planimal just saw that weird bird, like the clackabird or whatever it's called. He says, I must first of all apologize for your fright as you arrived, he said. A little test we have to do. I'm afraid your worst fear is picked from your mind and, well, brought to life. He leaned forward as though only they should hear. There's no one else there. Supposed to give a final insight into the kind of spirit you have. And what kind of spirits have we, said Brog, unimpressed that they should have been put to any kind of test, particularly one of that nature. It lasted all of 3 seconds, by the way. The Drab Keeper looked suitably sorry for his actions. You're the only creatures to have reached Sharonover 2,000 light years. Maybe that answers your question. It didn't, and Brog said so. I'm not exactly easy to get at, you may have noticed. Can't just drop in any old time. I don't think you realize how well you did in getting here. But you brought us, Brog began. Oh, no, interjected the Drab Keeper and spread his palms to emphasize the point. What? Your belief brought you. You see, even at the point of death, your belief in my existence was stronger than the fear of dying. And so a bubble appears. And I was like, okay, so then the whole rest of the book, and this was what I wanted to get to about the bubble, the whole rest of the book with Brog's great trek to the Wheel of Light, the light source, every moment of it, I was like, why can't he just take the bubble again?
Yeah.
If he manifested the bubble from his belief, then wouldn't his strong belief in fixing the light source manifest another bubble and he can just like, whee, to the light source?
Yeah.
I bet on the Brog the Stoop subreddit, there's all these defenders explaining why he couldn't take the bubble.
Yeah.
Like why they couldn't use the eagles to get to Mount Doom in Lord of the Rings. It's like, there's no way he could have used, if he'd used the bubble, then the Gorks would have seen it. So it's impossible.
Yeah, there's like a magical entropy
in the bubble. Yeah. But like all it would have taken was one sentence where it's like, oh, the bubble is only for the Drab Keeper. Like, right. Yeah. Just like sure. thing so that I stop questioning why there isn't a bubble anymore.
Yeah, okay, yeah, like he could be like, I can't interfere and giving you the bubble would tilt the scales too much.
Particularly when it was so completely, like, clearly emphasized that the Drab Keeper didn't send the bubble.
Yeah.
So that...
yeah. Also, kind of touching on Joe kind of getting tired of writing, there was a part that I laughed when the dad, Clan, and Brog are, like, traveling for a long time and, like, none of them talk for a very long time. And the second I had the question, I was like, why? No one's talked this whole time. Like, it's been like a day. And there's just like one sentence where it's like, they were silent the whole time. Yeah. I was like, okay.
See, like, that's all I need. If you're, just like the slightest justification is fine with me.
It's fine. So they travel. So Planimal's like, I can't go because there's only hard ground where you're going. And Brog's like, okay. So I'm going to go by myself. Oh, I met Jed. Okay, now we're going together. Glowkeeper's dead. We have his, like, ashes in a little pouch that we're supposed to, like...
Oh, that's right.
Throw...
Oh, yeah, because, like, Red Eye killed the Glowkeeper before Brog could get to him.
And the Glowkeeper's ghost is like, throw me in front of you and I shall help you get to your destiny. And then he's also like, and your enemy will help you with the source. And he's like, I'm going to forget about that. And then they both go, they meet some like scary beings, like, but that are actually like very fluffy in a cave.
Oh yeah. Remember the guardians. Creatures?
Yeah. The guardians.
I immediately pictured Popples.
Me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just pictured them as a bunch of Popples or the star sprites in Rainbow Bright.
Oh, I did not picture star sprites.
They're basically,
I was thinking of the little, I think this is adjacent, but the little, like, they're like sprites. They're like the little ash creatures in Spirited Away.
Oh my god, cute! Like,
I thought it was that sort of thing.
Except when they talked, it was unpleasant.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they like were really drawn out and loud. They're like,
and their lips like go out like a trombone.
Fix the light wars.
So basically, the guardians are like, it's cold in here and we're freezing to death.
Must be some toros in the atmosphere.
And Brog and Jed is like, my leg is fucked up and I'm going to slow you down. But then actually, I'll come back and still be with you.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
He should have been sent away immediately when he broke that away. Leg. You got to get back to the Glow Castle. You are just total dead weight.
Dead weight. And then they get to this actually, I will say the one part that I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, was the source. I thought the source was like kind of cool in that it's like a big wheel that's like halfway out of this big hill and like half of the wheel has like light in it and half of it is dark and it's like spokes of a wagon wheel and it's just turning slowly and that's how like light comes out, and then when the light spokes go under, then it's dark. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I still but the Stoops want like they don't want it to be like the Gork plan is to make it. I'm sorry, you might be getting here, but the Gork plan is to make it
please.
Forever dark and. But the Stoops don't want that, but also the Stoops don't like light. Is that, am I tracking all of that?
No, it's that they can't, basically it's like us. You can't stare directly into the sun.
Got it.
And so it's like, if like in the Glow world, particularly Stoops though, it's too bright.
Right.
So they need the like filtering of trees. And I guess that's why it's called the Gloom Glen or Great Gloom or something maybe. Like they need the light, but I think it was like supposed to be just like a desert. He basically was having to travel through the desert.
Got it.
And like being so close to it is like too bright.
Got
I guess.
It. Okay. Yeah.
So it's like part of it's broken and like now here's where my like appreciation of it stopped. Like the second we got into the minutia of like why it's broken, how to fix it, I was like, I don't care.
That was where I lost even a sense of how it worked.
Yeah.
Cool idea. But yeah, I was starting. It's like, while very descriptive, it's not
informative.
Yes. Yeah. It's not effective description. Like no. he goes on and on about how it works and I still can't grasp how it works. So maybe I'm an idiot.
No.
I would account for that possibility.
So I think the way it's broken is that there's like a leak in the, like there's like a crack in the light side. So like the light is spilling out a lot in like one, in like a hole basically. Mm. And so the like parts of the wheel that are like the spokes, like here's what I'm imagining, a wagon wheel that's like coated in wax paper. So half of the wagon wheel has like color emanating from the wax paper. And then the other side is just dark. And then so it slowly turns and there's like a hole in the wax paper. So the light is like escaping out of the wax paper. So the rest of it's too dark.
I think that's what they thought it was. And then when they got beneath, they realized
that
it
was something else.
Was from beneath and that it had to be in the big earthquake that happened. That's how it got damaged. I think there was like a rock.
Yeah, it was the rock.
Blocking something because they get it to the. No, maybe that there's something to that because they had to set up discs.
And oh my God, don't even get me started on these discs. Oh, I did not maybe get that.
Oh, okay. Theory.
Okay.
It's like a water mill as if there's liquid light.
Oh, and so it was it's coming
being
out?
Blocked by maybe a rock or something. And they like reflected the light to start flowing because then it's like the power of the wheel because it's getting more light is so strong it like crushes whatever rock had been holding it back.
I think literally Brog the Stoop didn't have to do shit because
it seemed like it.
what Red Eye does actually like fixes it because like basically Red Eye gets it stuck so that it's like all the light is under the ground and the darkness is out there. And then the light under the ground starts to like dissolve the rock that blocked it.
Or it and then builds up underground so that they're able to redirect it. And he tricks them into like breaking the rock.
Somehow. Dude, I did not understand how Gork died.
Yeah, Red Eye, you mean, or all the
Red Eye? Sorry, yeah, Red Eye.
Red Eye, the Chief Gork. By the way,
that was one of his shortcuts. I think. they're fighting, and then it cuts to Jed, and Jed's like, "I gotta get to Brog and help him." And he gets there, and Red Eye has already died.
Yeah.
Well, he dies off page.
Well, it's Jed, like one Jed, sentence.
Jed is like, "Oh, the light is very bright, and now it's not as bright. What happened? Oh, he's dead." I did not understand how he died.
What were you going to say, Weiger?
I think it's literally one sentence. They were like it's just like Gork had been killed, or I'm sorry, Red Eye had been killed. It does not evoke at all how the cause of death.
Well, that reminds me of another shortcut. Finish what you were going to say.
Oh, it just reminded me of, because he's set up as such a, maybe this is a weird comparison, but at the end of Mission Impossible 3.
Go on.
Philip Seymour Hoffman is such a great villain in that movie. And then he has such a weak death that it honestly makes the whole movie work just a little bit less. That he just kind of basically is pushed in front of a truck and then just gets run over kind of unceremoniously. And it had a similar feeling with Red Eye too. It's like if you're gonna set Red Eye up as such a menace and such a he is the head of this faction of this evil
demons.
Faction of unrepentant monsters. I would have liked to have seen just like a little maybe you know what, because the Gork are so selfish. Maybe this is the Gork all turn on him. Maybe that would have been a satisfying coda for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Like a Scar at the end of Lion King when all the hyenas descend.
Pull a Scar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We stan.
We stan a Scar moment.
yeah.
Here's the other shortcut.
Okay.
It's when Lynn is hatching their plan to for her and Cora to escape enslavement and get the word to
oh yeah
the stoop that the Gork are going to march on the Sheer Stone, which is apparently like a towers, because I looked at that map that you made me aware of. There is like a tower, and we must find the real reason behind what Red Eye is doing. Attack the Sheer Stone he may, but I fear it will be only to hide his true purpose. You have a plan. It was a statement, not a question. Lynn nodded. To join the march. Cora gasped, mouth open. What? Are you with me? A little under an hour later, and the two friends were hidden in bush by the side of the way. How?
Yeah.
How did they get there? How did they escape?
Yeah.
I realized toward the end of reading this that it reads much more like an outline than the actual work itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for just like the really long parts.
Right.
But yeah.
He like, there are like parts where he just like went for the actual writing of it. And then there were parts where he's like, well, I'll fill this out later.
Like literally like this. Yeah. It seems like a part like in something that I would outline that's like figure out a way to get protagonist here.
Exactly. Or like this is like a bookmark dialogue or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you watch a movie and you can kind of see the deleted scenes of just like, oh, they kind of, they cut this whole passage out and they just were like, this just makes it flow faster. Yeah. He picked his spots in terms of where he wanted to go into detail. And then in those spots, he went into pretty specific detail.
Mm-hmm. Really specific detail. Yeah.
That unfortunately, like just kept me at arm's length from the work.
Yeah. I mean, the story, like he kept telling us how amazing Brog is, but I didn't see it. I was just like, I mean, he's like very Mary Sue-ish, mm-hmm. but.
I mean, he's like textbook. This is the hero of fantasy quest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much chosen one from page one. Do you think if this book had, because I don't know if this if I'd been read this as a kid, if this would have been like a book where I'm like, oh, I love that book, if it would have had some nostalgia for it, or if this would have just been another one where just like, oh yeah, that I read that book, like I don't have a particular, like I feel like it would have fallen into the second category. I think it would have been second. Yeah, but I was fascinated early on when you were just talking about the fandom that this has. I don't know, maybe it's just a smaller group who really connected with this for some reason. Sometimes, you know, I feel like you connect with something as a kid just because it's not the big thing, you know, because you weren't, it wasn't Harry Potter or it wasn't The Hobbit. It was this Brog the Stoop, this thing that you felt like was just yours. Maybe that's a factor. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Or even that it was just there, you know, like sometimes like a lot of things when you're a kid, you're like in a space to read something to project a lot of your own stuff onto, like if you're an unhappy child or whatever, like, because there have been certain things that we've read on this podcast, Invitation to the Game. I remember I liked it a lot as a kid and we reread it and I was like, yo, this is boring. But like, so this might be, I don't know. I think maybe if I had been in the right place, like a particularly boring summer where I wasn't allowed to go outside, if I had read this book, would I like it? I don't think so, because I don't want to sound speciesist, but
not enough human, not enough of a like audience stand in.
Yeah, I think as a kid, I only liked stories about humans.
Right.
And then if they weren't about humans, like the characters had to be like really, you know, like well thought out and like have a lot of personality, whereas these characters did not.
I was into creature movies, but I don't think I wasn't reading much fantasy as a kid. And so I think if I'd encountered this, I would have pieced out after a chapter because of all the terminology, because that's always been
the
barrier
of
entry for me when it comes to fantasy my entire life.
Yeah. I mean, I liked fantasy as a kid. I don't know if I would have liked this book.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of, you know, as much as we're as much as we've been dogpiling on his specific choices, I do kind of like, you know, all the, you know, like immersing myself in a new world and learning about all the, you know, learning all the terminology. Like, I do kind of generally like that. But it, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like for me, just the big thing is just, it's just so, it's at once both hard to follow. And then, Kelly's, you're saying, like, it's just like, there's not a lot to, Brog as a character. He's just kind of bland. And I think that, and that's a big element for me. I'm just like, I did have trouble connecting with this protagonist.
Yeah. The total lack of the only relationship building moment is between Brog and Planimal. And then he gets rid of Planimal.
Yeah.
Like Planimal, yeah. Like figures heavily into how Brog succeeds. Like Planimal is connecting with him telepathically through plants in the area. And so he's able to generate like vines to get him to the light source. This is something I thought was cool, was the like ever generating and decaying climates and like worlds in the like valley before the light source.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
It was like whole rainforests and forests and deserts would generate and then fall. It was like a writhing sea of evolution.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like very cool.
There's like a passage about the entire volume of a lake evaporating. And I was like, oh, that's, I like that. I like picturing that. That's a new idea.
So that I think was described well, and I understood what the dangers were. And then I understood how Planimal was able to connect with all of those ever evolving things, but with difficulty to help Brog get to the light source. So that was a highlight for me. Planimal. Highlight for me as well. I wanted this to be about Planimal. I did not care about anything but Planimal.
Where's my Truly, Planimal spinoff? Planimal,
yes. Yes. Brog 2, Planimal's Revenge.
Here's
Who's he getting revenge on?
Rise of Planimal. I, for Planimal, was the entire time picturing a toy I had as a kid. They were called Rockin' Flowers. They would dance in response to music.
Cool.
Did you guys ever see those? I'm going to send you that and I'll put it in the show notes too, because that's all. I was just picturing a little toy on the back of Brog the whole journey that like was swaying back and forth and wearing sunglasses.
Yeah.
Oh my God, cute. Oh yes, I know that toy.
And they all had little musical instruments.
When you said sunglasses. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, the flower was a saxophone, tight. I think, of. It was like the, before the Big Mouth Billy Bass. That was like the original like dancing inanimate object.
It was like the like non-man cave version.
Yeah.
Big Mouth Billy Bass. I loved Planimal. In my mind, I was picturing like the cute little flowers from Alice in Wonderland. Not the mean ones, but like the cute ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones that were like admiring Alice's stems.
Yeah. And honestly, Planimal, even on a micro sense, like just breathed life into every scene that Planimal was in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was like an interesting, you know, again, for like a totally fantastical world, it was just like an interesting. It was just an interesting like idea for a character, and then he had an interesting relationship with the protagonist.
And there were moments of them like truly conversing and getting to know one another that was totally lacking when it came to him and Jed.
Right.
Oh, fuck Jed. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's gonna be the revenge. Planimal's trying to take out Jed for trying to be an imposter. but yeah, so basically Light comes back, hooray. They used this was another part that I was like, this is kind of jacked. They like took the scales off of Red Eye's
dead body.
Horrifying.
to then fix the device. Like that was like some Saw shit.
Yeah, they're dismembering his corpse. And yes. I know it doesn't matter like to what degree of evil this guy is. It's just it pushed it past a point where I was just like, man, they should just not be doing that, you know?
No, they should not.
I gotta
be doing
say
that.
If anybody listening is into dark cartoons where you think the creators should not be doing that, check out Infinity Train, now streaming on HBO Max.
There's another passage earlier too where there's one of the Gorks, and he has they're trying to make him witness all the eggs that are being destroyed, so they like,
oh my god,
they like cut his like Achilles or something, so he's just like, he just has to sit there and paralyzed and has to witness all
these eggs
being destroyed
out, watching genocide.
They're right. Incredibly cruel to this cruel race. And like I said, I don't like it when heroes are like, we never kill. I'm like, well, sometimes if you're in a battle, you have to kill. That's what you're setting up, guys. But this was truly like remorseless.
Yeah.
And also, I want to know,
I prefer some moral gray areas.
That I know that Lindsay and I last week were singing a completely different tune when we were saying, I don't want to tell you how to run your genocide, but you have to get rid of the bloodline. This
is making me turn around on that.
This, I think I turn around. I'm like, this is a bridge too far.
When I actually see it in action,
yeah,
I am horrified with what I said last week.
Yeah, which is why neither of us should ever be a despot of any kind. But
yeah, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, reading this, Lindsay and I were like, what have I done? But yeah, so Light's back and he gets to go be with his breed mate, Lynn. Mm-hmm. And she's like, great, I was just like making weapons and like waiting for
thought
you.
Thought of nothing but you and my enslavement and in my freedom.
I was like, girl, maybe like, I don't know.
I will say it was clear that everybody was constantly thinking of Lynn when she was kidnapped. So
That's true.
An imbalance of caring.
No, everyone was really obsessed with each other.
That's true. Friendship was highly valued and not very well defined.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would say maybe you could skip this book as far as reading it.
Weiger, your final thoughts?
It's a quick read. That's what's not, it's not, you know, there's,
it says you.
Well, I mean, it's not a super long book. Yes, it does take a little bit of time to get through it just because you need some mental breaks to, you know, digest all the vocabulary. But I think that's maybe the thing in its favor is that it's kind of it's not the longest thing you have to immerse yourself in, seeing as how long some fantasy can drag on for.
True.
But I would say skip this book. There's only so much time to read so many books, and I don't think you need to read Brog the Stoop.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, clearly from the Goodreads reviews, there is an audience for this.
There is an audience maybe of 143 like, people.
Go ahead,
and they will die for this book.
Go ahead. Oh, also the very.
Oh, I couldn't. No. Lindsay, I couldn't.
The very first
Lindsay, I couldn't.
Person who added this book to their collection is Joe Boyle, the man himself.
And he rated it. He's the first rater of this book.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You gotta bet on yourself. You gotta be your own biggest fan.
That's true.
That's true.
I don't want this man to feel. The thing is, I always in these books, I have to respect the work ethic of actually finishing a piece of art.
100%.
Always we're all to be creators. Commended. Always to be commended. And yeah. Certainly, I have not made much. So who am I to criticize?
Yeah, right? Like, I didn't write Brog the Stoop, so who am I to criticize?
I didn't write Brog the Stoop. I've never written a fantasy novel, so, you know, I should fuck off. But
yeah,
I read it, and these were my thoughts.
Yeah.
On that note, I will say that I think this could be the kind of thing where this could be like a okay book, and if someone adapted it in the correct way, this could be like very cool, you know, like kind
I
of
agree.
Like change some things and it just simplified some things and then also just like made it look great. I think this could be like a cool, like, I mean, you know, Dark Crystal was what we talked about earlier. This feels like it could be a Dark Crystal-esque the dark fantasy that could have its own, you know, a niche fan base.
And inevitably, honestly, in all of the descriptions I was getting confused by, the people adapting it would have to make it work. And so I'd be seeing how it works. And so that obstacle would be removed.
We're finally going to know what that wheeled device was.
Yes.
Yes.
And it like I said, it read wheel. Like an outline.
Yeah.
So you've got yeah. it. You guys have it.
Well, and like the great thing about an adaptation too is you can skip over the boring stuff. So all of the internal, you know, logicking your way to what the reader already knows, you can just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very adaptable.
Very adaptable. Hey, Joel, give a Joel. Joel.
That's what people are calling him.
My boy Joel. I call him Joel. Give his friends call him Joel.
His friends call him Joel.
Joel, I hope that you didn't listen to this episode. Honestly. I never honestly. Want the people we criticize to hear.
No. Only the people that we fan out about.
Except for Christopher Pike, yeah.
Yes, we love you, Christopher Pike. Thank you so much, Nick Weiger, for coming on and doing this show.
What a
for
treat. Talking.
Such Brog a pleasure to have us. You again.
Thank you, as always.
As soon as I saw this title, I was like, we must get Nick Weiger.
Yes. Take that as you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Interpret that however you may.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
You know, check out Doughboys. Check out How Did This Get Played. Both of you have been on both podcasts. And check out Earth to Ned now on Disney Plus. It's a giant alien puppet who hosts a talk show. It's ridiculous and it looks great and it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Woo-hoo. Thank you so much, Nick. Check out all that stuff, guys. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you so much to our Patreon producers. You help keep us alive. Very special thank you to our Patreon producers. Thank you, Aaron Fernandez.
Amanda Nangle.
Ann Dwyer.
Ashley Fritz.
Claire Moore.
Marty McPhail.
Danielle Lamana.
Danny.
Emily Pooley.
Gabriela Santiago.
Gianna Fernandez.
Grace Armstrong.
Jeremy Cronk.
Jonathan Venable.
Jordan Colwin.
And apologies to Nick. For not deciding to record this after this the separately? Fact.
Yes.
Did we say Jordan Colwick yet?
Yeah, right. Say it again.
Jordan Colwick.
Karen Lewis.
Pat Miller.
Katie Lilly.
Katie Olsner.
Kelly Burns.
Christerina.
Landry Desmond.
Laura Hooper.
Lonnie Martin.
Luke Bartek.
Mandalay Wolschlager.
Mariana Terzakis.
Melody. Ugh. Oh my God. You've cursed yourself. Melody.
Megan Lozier.
Micah Yunus.
Miguel Camacho.
Miranda Hester.
Molly Marks.
Oscar Gallegos.
Pamela.
Randy Glett.
Rashad Black.
Rogue Kalahua.
Saoirse Descaro.
Sarah.
Sarah Jaggers.
Sarah Nichelle.
Lost my place. Sarah Wallen. I'm terrible today.
Sasha Gibson.
Shannon Pickens.
Sydney Bollinger.
Tristan Buckner.
Victoria Beck.
Victoria Valdez.
And Wendy Bartos.
Thank you, guys.
You don't have to give at that tier. You can give at any tier. Patreon.com/teencreeps.
We've got lots of
I'd love it if you got to that end of, the end of that list and we're just like, Joe Boyle, uh-oh.
Oh, no!
Nick!
Nightmare. I literally got sweaty.
Oh, and I would like to take one name again because they are new to the list. Thank you, Saoirse Descaro.
Beautiful.
I pronounced it incorrectly.
Beautiful. All right. Well, huge thanks again to Nick Weiger for guesting. And a huge thanks to Joel Boyle for writing that book.
Always fun. We will see you next week. In the meantime, stay safe, wear a mask, social distance, keep it creepy.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.